Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Kelly Jean Kelly and Anna Mateo. Later, Steve Ember will present the American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Kelly Jean Kelly.
A gunman in Texas shot and killed 26 people in a church in the small community of Sutherland Springs, Texas, on Sunday. At least 20 people were injured in the shooting. Victims included children and the elderly. The suspected gunman is also dead. The event comes weeks after another major mass shooting in the United States. On October 1st, Stephen Paddock shot and killed 58 people at a concert in Las Vegas, Nevada, and wounded about 500 more. It was the worst mass shooting in modern U.S. history. In both events, the reason remains unclear. The police and the public search for answers. Jeffrey Simon, an expert on mass killings, told CNN that wanting to know why someone would commit such a terrible crime is natural. It is hard to get an answer, however. Public safety official Freeman Martin identified the gunman in Texas as 26-year-old Devin Kelly. Martin described him as a white male wearing a bulletproof vest. Reports say he opened fire with an assault rifle outside of the First Baptist Church, entered, and continued shooting. The names of those killed have not been officially released yet. However, many people in the church knew Kelly. While Kelly was shooting, a local person with his own rifle approached the gunman. This caused the gunman to drop his weapon and flee in his vehicle. The citizen reportedly chased the gunman. Police then joined in pursuing the suspect. The suspect crashed and was found dead in his vehicle. Officials say he shot and killed himself. Police have not found any links between Kelly and an organized terror group. They say that his criminal history with the police includes only minor driving violations. However, a spokesman for the U.S. Air Force told VOA that records show Kelly was discharged from the Air Force 3 years ago. He was charged with assaulting his wife and their child. The couple divorced. 2 years later, Kelly married again. It is unknown whether he and his second wife are still together. Texas Governor Greg Abbott said, "The shooting was the worst in the history of the state of Texas." He added that law enforcement officials had many pieces of a complex puzzle to put together about the events. President Trump called the event a mental health problem at the highest level. Examinations of previous mass shooting events have linked a number of issues to such violence. After the Las Vegas shooting, CNN reporter Eric Levinson interviewed Michael Stone, a psychiatric professor at Columbia University. Levinson writes, "In general, mass killers, almost all of whom are young men, are motivated by some combination of paranoia and mental illness, or financial and social problems," he said. In the case of the Texas shooter, reports say that Kelly had a troubled relationship with his mother-in-law, who attended the church. But Catherine Ramsland, a professor of forensic psychology at DeSales University, has cautioned against identifying a motive too quickly. She points to the mass shooting at Columbine High School in 1999. In that event, two students killed 12 classmates and a teacher and wounded more than 20 other people. They then killed themselves. After Columbine, Ramsland says, the media used the information they had to offer an explanation that was not complete or proven. Later studies of the event found more complicated reasons. In general, experts agree that a single event usually does not cause a person to take violent action. Instead, many things can be involved over a long period of time. The lack of a single or simple explanation has been a hallmark of the Las Vegas shooting in October. The gunman did not seem troubled by money or romantic relationship problems. And the public is still struggling to understand the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in 2012. In that event, a 20-year-old man shot and killed 20 children and 6 adults before committing suicide. A report from state officials confirmed that the Sandy Hook shooter had mental health problems, but it did not identify a reason for the crime. Writing in Time magazine, Ari Shulman has said that the lack of a reason defines violence against a large number of strangers. The mass shooting is a crafted public spectacle, a theater of violence, Shulman wrote. Its aim is to cause a public reaction and to bring attention to the shooter, even if the attention is negative, Shulman said. And the victims are more than the people who are struck by the bullets. The guns are aimed at society itself. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
The Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia is expanding his power over the Middle East country with a reported anti-corruption campaign. King Salman named his son, Mohammed bin Salman, Crown Prince in June. The 32-year-old prince replaced his cousin, Mohammed bin Nayef, as the next in line to be king. There have been no public displays of opposition to the campaign within the kingdom. But outside observers say the prince is removing opponents to expand his own power. In the Washington Post newspaper, Saudi reporter Jamal Khashoggi wrote that the Saudi royals usually share power and rule by consent. He added, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman is upending this arrangement and centralizing all power within his position as Crown Prince. Almost 50 people were detained early Sunday, including 11 princes, 4 government ministers, and 1 billionaire. A royal order on Saturday said the campaign was launched in reaction to abuses of power. The order said some officials had put their own interests above the public interest in order to make money illegally. A Saudi official told Reuters that the men are accused of several serious financial crimes, including bribery. The accusations could not be confirmed independently. Family members of those detained could not be reached. The detainees are being held in hotels in the capital, and a no-fly list has been created to prevent owners of private airplanes from leaving the country. Prince Mutaib bin Abdullah is among those detained. He has been serving as head of Saudi Arabia's National Guard. He was responsible for security in the capital and the guarding of members of the royal family. The moves give Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman control of all Saudi security and military forces. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. A new study on pain management around the world has shocked researchers. The study found that many people in poor and middle-income countries suffer unimaginable pain without any help. They lack even the cheapest painkillers to manage severe pain. The results of this study has led to action. Researchers now want to find ways to help the millions of people who suffer needlessly. Felicia Nall is one of the researchers involved in the study. She is a professor at the University of Miami's School of Medicine. She says that around 61 million people worldwide live and some die in great pain because of a lack of pain medicine and proper care. Nall says she became interested in global pain management after her own surgery for breast cancer.
I woke up from a mastectomy and I remember the horror of the pain of not being able to breathe. And yet I got access almost immediately to pain relief, which allowed me to push through it much more easily.
She says that when she realized how inexpensive it could be to help people suffering in pain, she felt the need to act.
When I thought about other women going through this, when I thought about children burn victims and having their wounds dressed and cleaned and the agony of that without pain relief, and then when I found out how inexpensive it is to solve this problem, a real win-win in global health, that was when we really decided to move forward.
Nall led the International Study on Pain Relief, published in The Lancet. She explains that the researchers looked at worldwide access to a common pain medication, morphine.
We looked across the world using, as a tracer, access to morphine, and more than 100 countries could satisfy less than 30% of need for pain relief just for palliative care alone. And in fact, the vast majority have almost nothing.
In the United States, morphine costs 3 cents per dose. In low-income countries, it costs 5 times as much. However, it is usually not available. If the cost of morphine were the same for all countries, the study found that it would cost $145 million to make pain relief available for all. Developing countries can work to close what researchers are calling the pain gap. Uganda is one example. Its government makes and distributes morphine for the country's hospitals. Doctors are trained in giving the drug, and patients are monitored. Nall has asked the World Bank to help end the pain gap. Experts are still developing plans, but the goal is clear: to provide pain relief for the millions of people who truly need it. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
For years, our American history series, The Making of a Nation, has been one of the most popular programs from VOA Learning English. The series started in 1969. Today, we start our series again from the beginning. Generations of school children have been taught that Christopher Columbus discovered the New World. In fact, the second Monday in October is celebrated as a national holiday to honor the European explorer. But October also has a lesser-known observance. October 9th is Leif Erikson Day. So who was Leif Erikson? Today, Steve Ember tells us about him and other early European explorers.
Leif Erikson was a Norse explorer who sailed around the northeastern coast of what we now call North America about 1,000 years ago. He and his crew returned to Greenland with news of a place he called Vinland. Following his explorations, a few settlements were built. Experts digging in eastern Canada in the 1960s found the remains of a village with houses like those in Greenland, Iceland, and Norway. But the Norse did not establish any permanent settlements in North America. Today, as we relaunch our series, we begin with the story of early European explorers in North America. In the 11th century, Europe was beginning a period of great change. One reason was the religious wars known as the Crusades. These were military campaigns by Christians to force Muslims out of the Holy Land in the Middle East. The Crusades began at the end of the 11th century. They continued for about 200 years. One effect of the presence of European armies in the Middle East was to increase trade. This trade was controlled by businessmen in Venice and other city-states in Italy. The businessmen earned large profits by supplying the warring armies and by bringing goods from the East into Europe. When the European crusaders returned home, they brought with them some new and useful products. These included spices, perfumes, silk cloth, and steel products. These goods became highly valued all over Europe. The increased trade with the East led to the creation and growth of towns along the supply roads. It also created a large number of rich European businessmen. The European nations were growing. They developed armies and governments. These had to be paid for with taxes collected from the people. By the 15th century, European countries were ready to explore new parts of the world. The first explorers were the Portuguese. By 1400, they wanted to control the eastern spice trade. European businessmen did not want to continue paying Venetian and Arab traders for their costly spices. They wanted to set up trade themselves. If they could sail to Asia directly for these products, the resulting trade would bring huge profits. The leader of Portugal's exploration efforts was Prince Henry, a son of King John I. He was interested in sea travel and exploration. He became known as Henry the Navigator. Prince Henry brought experts to his country and studied the sciences involved in exploration. He built an observatory to study the stars. Portuguese sea captains sailed their ships down the west coast of Africa, hoping to find a path to India and East Asia. They finally found the end of the African continent, the area called the Cape of Good Hope. It took the Portuguese only about 50 years to take control of the spice trade. They established trading colonies in Africa, the Persian Gulf, India, and China. Improvements in technology helped them succeed. One improvement was a new kind of ship. It could sail more easily through storms and winds. Other inventions, like the compass, allowed them to sail out of sight of land. The Portuguese also armed their ships with modern cannon. They used these weapons to battle Muslim and East Asian traders. The other European nations would not let Portugal control this spice trade for long, however. Spain's Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand agreed to provide ships, crew, and supplies for an exploration by an Italian named Christopher Columbus. Columbus thought the shortest way to reach the East was to sail west across the Atlantic Ocean. He was right, but he also was wrong. He believed the world was much smaller than it is. He did not imagine the existence of another continent and another huge ocean between Europe and East Asia. Columbus and a crew of 88 men left Spain on August 3, 1492, in three ships, the Niña, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. By October 12th, the sailors stood on land again on an island that Columbus named San Salvador. He explored the island and the nearby islands of what are now known as Cuba and Hispaniola. He believed they were part of the coast of East Asia, which was then called the Indies. He called the people he found there Indians. Columbus left about 40 men on San Salvador Island to build a fort from the wood of one of the ships. He returned to Spain with birds, plants, gold, and people captured from the land he explored. Columbus was welcomed as a hero when he returned to Spain in March of 1493. Columbus sailed again across the Atlantic to the Caribbean 5 months later. He found that the fort built by his men had been destroyed by fire. Columbus did not find any of his men. But this time, he had many more men and all the animals and equipment needed to start a colony on Hispaniola. 7 months later, he sent five ships back to Spain. They carried Indians to be sold as slaves. Columbus himself also returned to Spain. Columbus made another trip in 1498. This time, he saw the coast of South America. But the settlers on Hispaniola were so unhappy with conditions in their new colony, they sent Columbus back to Spain as a prisoner. Spain's rulers pardoned him. In 1502, Columbus made his final voyage to what some by then were calling the New World. He stayed on the island of Jamaica until he returned home 2 years later. During all his trips, Columbus explored islands and waterways, searching for that passage to the Indies. He never found it, nor did he find spices or great amounts of gold. Yet he always believed that he had found the Indies. He refused to recognize that it really was a new world. Evidence of this was all around him. Strange plants unknown in either Europe or Asia, and a different people who did not understand any language spoken in the East. Columbus's voyages, however, opened up the New World. Others later explored all of North America. Now, you may be wondering about the name of this new land. If Christopher Columbus led the explorations, then why is it called America? The answer lies with the name of another Italian explorer, Amerigo Vespucci. He visited the coast of South America in 1499. He wrote stories about his experiences that were widely read in Europe. In 1507, a German mapmaker, Martin Waldseemüller, read Vespucci's stories. He decided that the writer had discovered the New World and thought it should be called America in his honor. And so it was. Spanish explorers sought to find gold and power in the New World. They also wanted to spread Christianity, which they considered the only true religion. The first of these Spanish explorers was Juan Ponce de León. He landed in North America in 1513. He explored the eastern coast of what is now the state of Florida. He was searching for a special kind of water that Europeans believed existed. They believed that this water could make old people young again. Ponce de León never did find the Fountain of Youth. Also in 1513, Vasco Núñez de Balboa crossed the Isthmus of Panama and reached the Pacific Ocean. In 1519, Hernán Cortés landed an army in Mexico. His army destroyed the ancient empire of the Aztec Indians. That same year, Ferdinand Magellan began his 3-year voyage around the world. And in the 1530s, the forces of Francisco Pizarro destroyed the Inca Indian Empire in Peru. 10 years later, Francisco Vázquez de Coronado had marched as far north as what is now the American state of Kansas, and then west to the Grand Canyon. About the same time, Hernando de Soto reached the Mississippi River. 50 years after Columbus first landed at San Salvador, Spain claimed a huge area of America. The riches of these new lands made Spain the greatest power in Europe and the world.
Yet other nations refused to accept Spanish claims to the New World. Explorers from England, France, and Holland were also sailing to North America. That will be our story tomorrow. And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.